If you've been listening to our five series of countries that don't exist anymore, you'll know by now that we feature countries that don't exist anymore.
And that's why that's called that.
But today's country almost certainly wasn't a country in any serious sense. In fact, it might just have been a disparate bunch of people who lived next door to each other on the island of Crete in the Bronze Age and were just all really into jumping over bulls. I'll explain that later. This country is something we know as the Minoan civilization, and its people, the Minoans. But they never called themselves that. In fact, we failed to work out their writing so far, known as Linear A, so have absolutely no idea what they said about anything. The only reason that we know them as the Minoans is that in 1900, Arthur Evans, an archaeologist, was desperate to show off to a newly independent Greece that he'd found the first European civilization, i.e. as distinct from the nasty Asian Ottomans the Greeks had just broken away from. And although Crete wasn't a part of Greece until 1913, it was obviously considered part of the ancient Grecian world. Being branded the cradle for European civilization was a great spur for local Cretans, as well as being a useful funding argument for European and American archaeologists that worked there. After digging up a palace that he called the Palace of Knossos, some newspapers decided that what Evans had discovered was the mythological palace of King Minos, featuring the Minotaur and the Labyrinth, you know them. And while Evans didn't encourage this clickbait, he didn't help matters exactly by basically rebuilding the Knossos ruins just as he'd fancied, with a pretty cavalier disregard to careful archaeology. And while we probably have Evans to thank for us knowing anything about the Minoans at all, we're now having to untangle the wire drawer of falsities that are part of his legacy. So let's do what we can to reconstruct the real Minoan civilization. And excitingly, Ed actually visited the Palace of Knossos site for this episode 3 years ago and recorded directly, live from there, in our new investigative travel reporting strand, CTDEA on the Road.
CTDEA on the Road.
Musicians amongst the existers will recognise that what I just did was bloody clever, albeit slightly out of tune. In fact, he should be back any minute now. Now. Oh, he must have got delayed. So this time we're covering the Minoans, not a uniform people with any kind of national identity that we can tell of, not a country and not a state that likely ever existed. So welcome to
countries that never existed at all. They never existed till not anymore. If you're unclear what this podcast is for, it's for countries that never existed at all.
When was the Minoan civilization?
We think it developed on the island of Crete into something that we can label as Minoan in about 3100 BC. 3100 BC, if you prefer. Let us know which is the correct one. With complex urban settlements emerging in 2000 BC, which then lasted up until about 1450 BC. So that's about a millennium and a half of Minoa-ing.
Who were these Minoans?
The Minoans were non-Greek and perhaps a Semitic people. They were definitely the people who lived on Crete. These days, we call people who live on Crete
absolute cretins. Did you know I was waiting 4 bloody hours for that EasyJet flight just because those lazy bloody cabin crew didn't turn up? And the one thing I had to eat was half a stale cheese pie. I thought the food was supposed to be good in Greece, but from what I can tell, they're just a bunch of absolute witless, stubborn.
We're recording.
Culturally rich, enchanting people. You know, you really get a sense of their heritage and passion for their history on Crete. Life-affirming stuff. History was just brought to life in a way that you wouldn't get in a country there was where there was decent infrastructure and a basic grasp of logistics.
Yeah, nice save.
Thanks.
What we call Minoan culture wasn't just present on Crete, partly because they were such keen traders and maybe even because they liked shoving their noses into other people's business. We find Minoan pottery, art and influence on the Cyclades island in Italy, the Levant and Turkey, and their frescoes, which they basically seem to have invented in Egypt. They exported agricultural goods and luxury crafts in exchange for metal, which was in short supply on Crete.
What did the Minoans believe?
If you're in the market for a new religion, and snake goddesses float your boat, as they do mine, consider becoming a Minoan worshipper. The Minoan main gods seem to be female, with more minor male consort god, i.e. Prince Philip. The whole thing was presided over by priestesses. Bit like The View. While we have no idea who was in their god squad, we do think they worshipped at certain shrines and caves. Their art is all about movement, skillfully depicting people and animals on highly decorated pottery, seals, and frescoes. When the Minoans drew people, they tend to be in profile, like Egyptian figures, but they seem to have exaggerated features like slim waists and large breasts. This is the first evidence of Bronze Age porn. They painted detailed frescoes of landscapes, and you get all kinds of animals. Octopuses, octopi, horses, bulls. Bulls are actually a very common feature and seem to have a divine importance. The sign of the bull was also accompanied by an axe, suggesting something sacrificial was going on. Minoan art had loads of frescoes with boys grabbing bulls by the horns and leaping over them. Seems to have been an early extreme sport.
Minoan bull jumping, sponsored by Red Bull.
Red Bull, it gives you wounds.
I saw a lot of this sort of thing, not Red Bull, but other soft drinks were available on Crete. But I did see a lot of this kind of thing at the Heraklion Archaeological Museum. I've got to say, Phil, if you are into big jugs, not joking.
No.
If you're into pots and jugs and such, and all sorts of jewellery, their craftsmanship is seriously incredible. And actually, I've been to many ancient Greek and ancient Roman museums, and they've got stuff from 1,000 years later. And the Minoan stuff is much, much better. It's almost scary.
It's almost like civilization was more advanced the further back you go. And you know what that means?
Aliens!
Now, mortals, if you fire clay in this way, you can make really great pottery. And if you pile stones on top of another stone, you get pyramids! Pyramids are awesome!
Well, I mean, couldn't you just teach us to travel faster than light instead?
Look, we're more than happy to use the advanced technology. Yeah. We just have no idea how it works. One day, you humans will understand.
Right, I mean, that's not exactly answering my question, why you can't make us go faster than light instead.
Flood! You're all dead! Ha 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 ha! No.
What kind of government did these Minoans have?
This is hard to say, since their art doesn't seem to point to one singular king, even though there's splendour enough to suggest a powerful central monarchy. That's not to say they didn't have a King Minos type, it's just that we haven't found any evidence of him.
Goddamn Bronze Age commies.
No. Burials do seem to show some signs of social stratification. Not surprising.
Hey, that's swell! Great! That's better! They sound Christian!
God.
Yeah! Democracy!
Let's monetize it! Not surprising, with some people getting rich from a booming trade. That's what happens today. And the rewards of that trade were extremely fancy doohickeys, like ornate jewellery, finely crafted daggers, and golden cups. And while it's difficult to say what the setup was, we can at least point to buildings that we can call palaces. But these don't seem to be just palaces built for head honchos. Many of the archaeological finds come from the palace ruins mainly found in eastern Crete at Knossos, Malia, Phaistos, and Zakros. These palaces were large, multi-story buildings set around a central courtyard. Within the palace happened trade, manufacturing, sports, food storage, religious ceremonies, and just about everything you would expect in an urban centre. These palaces were less royal residence and more everything. They seem to have acted as urban hubs and commercial centres. We think they may have played a dual function both as administrative and religious centres too, though, as with many early civilizations, these two functions went hand in hand.
What is the Palace of Knossos?
the most famous archaeological site of the Minoan civilization and maybe one of the first permanent settlements. The palace was discovered in 1878 and was tied into the myth of King Minos, Theseus, and the Minotaur. And if you need a quick refresher to that legend, here it is.
The Minotaur was the son of Queen Pasiphae. Her match fell in love with a sacred bull and commissioned a local sex toy expert to invent a contraption so she could make sweet love to it. As a result, she became pregnant with a child who was a half-human, half-bull monstrosity. Unable to get him into any local primary schools, King Minos imprisoned the Minotaur in a labyrinth. Minos' actual human son, Androgynous, was killed while participating in the Athenian Games. As restitution, King Minos demanded that King Aegeus of Athens must send 7 young men and women for the Minotaur to eat. It was a pretty standard peace treaty. On the third year, Theseus, son of King Aegeus, volunteered to go, and in short, he not only managed to slay the Minotaur, but also work his way out of the labyrinth. Incidentally, due to an easily avoidable mix-up with sail colours, King Aegeus thought Theseus had been killed, and so threw himself into the sea. And we've called it the Aegean Sea ever since.
So it took a monarch committing suicide for a major waterway to get a name.
What do you think they called it before that?
It's not important.
Ah, so an irrelevant sea.
You're up ship Crete with that joke, Ed. So when Victorian archaeologist Sir Arthur Evans got to the site, he decided that this Minos legend probably was one of those didn't literally happen but must have some truth to it dealies, and so went to work fabricating some history.
Who was this Sir Arthur Evans?
Like the ancient Minotaur, the Guardian describe Evans as half man, half bull, because of his work at the Palace of Knossos, which involved unearthing / making up discoveries, rebuilding rooms where he pleased, and even pouring concrete on. These days, we take a very careful scientific approach to archaeology, but back in the day, it was a bit more dig a big hole and see what you get. And that's not a problem for everyone. In Greece, he's still actually considered something of a hero. While pretty much desecrating the site to, quote-unquote, restore it, he was certainly the leading cheerleader for Minoan civilization, and probably why we know about them today. Arthur Evans wasn't just an archaeologist, he was also a journalist who lived in Dubrovnik and wrote about politics. He knew about publicising his work and how to get an audience, so he felt that people needed to see reconstructions to get them excited about the Minoans.
I mean, that's just such nonsense. I mean, surely, if you are really into your history and archaeology, a bit of old wool should be more than enough to get you really fired up. You know, just knowing that the ancients dwelt there, I think that should be enough for anyone. You know, I mean, as long as they have toilets on site and, I don't know, a gift shop and perhaps a cafe, a themed roller coaster could be. I mean, what's wrong with people's attention span these days, right, Phil?
What? Oh, Evans was only given permission to excavate by the local authorities once they had untangled themselves from the Ottomans, so that Minoan artifacts didn't end up in Istanbul, and with the proviso that he took nothing home, unlike Lord Elgin, who made the Parthenon's loss the British Museum's gain. The one thing Evans certainly did steal was credit. Since a Greek businessman and scholar, Minos Kallikernos, was the one who actually discovered the ruins. But credit where credit's due, everybody, including Evans, thought it was a Mycenaean site. It was only after digging began that Evans realised that Knossos was much older, and not just Minoan old, but megalithic old. And to take a minor tour, I thank you, of the Palace of Knossos site, here's our CTDEA On the Road correspondent, Ed.
Hi.
Oh, not you, Ed. Past Ed.
CTDEA On the Road.
We've just entered the Palace of Knossos. We don't know what to expect, but apparently it was all reconstructed in the Victorian era by a guy with an active imagination and someone a bit obsessed with
Greek myths, so whether it's actually true or not, we'll find out.
So the first place you enter is the West Court, which is like a large paved area with three holes that look a bit like shallow wells. Back to you, past Ed.
In the West Court, there are three large holes with steps at the bottom. No one really knows what they're for. They could have been used for storing grain or rubbish dumps or anything else. There's loads of bits of the Palace of Knossos, which we really don't know what they're for. But if in doubt, just say ceremony, ritual, religious rite. Nobody knows. Throughout the site, you see absolutely huge columns, and although they probably had architectural applications, they probably also led to epic games of hide and seek.
Ha! That's right, Past Ed. The Palace of Knossos has huge columns and giant blocks of stone seamlessly laid on top of each other, as was the megalithic style of the time.
But the impressiveness of the materials aside, Arthur Evans went around moving everything about so he could arbitrarily assign rooms to everything, which resulted in quite a large chunk of good old-fashioned vandalism. There's one chamber which Arthur Evans decided was a throne room, because why not? Pretty much so that he could invite the King of Greece to come and sit in it and act as a nice PR stunt. Now, here's what Past Ed made of it. Past Ed, back to you.
So the throne room is kind of a reconstruction that Arthur Evans made up. It's called that because there's a sort of stone seat and some benches surrounding it, and then some kind of well in the middle, which is probably some sort of ritual significance like everything else. But it has on the walls, there are very colourful frescoes, which obviously are recreations. But then it looks like there's some original frescoes in a like an antechamber just in front of them, but just behind three black pillars. And I think there's some steps leading down into this little red chamber. But yeah, it's such an epic thing. It seems quite a pokey little room to be like the royal room.
Probably the toilet,
the golden throne. Could have been a mam. That's right, it could have been many things. It is about the size of a very generous disabled toilet.
Thanks, Past Ed. Now, that was actually the sound of my partner in the background, who's always been very supportive of me ruining holidays by recording my own voice. And here she is again.
Shut up.
What'd you say?
Shut up.
Thanks, Past Karin. Fortunately, Evans didn't get his hand on everything. One bit he failed to dig up is what's called the East Wing, which is built around a multi-story staircase of epic proportions. Over to Past Ed. Past Ed.
So the East Wing is built into the hillside, and the good thing about it is it wasn't made up by Arthur Evans. It was buried and is pretty much intact, except they're rebuilding some of it with concrete, so you get a really good sense of the shape of the thing. It looks really amazing. It's built into the hillside, and it's like four stories almost of like a winding grand staircase with red pillars. They think it's probably where maybe like a royal residence, where very important people lived, and they could shout up the staircase at each other. I'm not really going to go into the West Wing, because again, it's another one that was reconstructed by Evan, so he just decided whatever he wanted. Although, legitimately, he found lots of sculptures or busts of the snake goddess, and I should use the word bust, because they are figurines of a goddess woman holding up two snakes, and she has a massive pair of breasts, i.e. busts. Likewise, there's an area called the theatre area, which Arthur Evans called the theatre area because he said it reminded him of theatres. He really was a top-notch historian. The central court connects all the wings of the palace and is apparently a common feature of Minoan palaces. It says on the official board that it's thought that the areas must have been for meetings and rituals of both a sacred and profane character.
Thanks, Past Ed. Sacred, I get, but what's all these profane meetings about, Phil?
It's where people said things like, pass the f***ing biscuits.
Thanks, Present Phil. If you have a chance to go absolutely do, yes, it's a total anachronism, and yes, Arthur Evans basically played a Victorian game of The Sims to build it, but the stones, the local history, and the glorious setting,
yeah, they make it worthwhile. And although it's a small site, it does retain one aspect of Greek mythology.
There's a kind of myth of the Minotaur who was in a labyrinth, which, you know, a lot of us thought was just made up. But I've been wandering around the relatively small site of Knossos for an hour, and I've lost my girlfriend. So it turns out it is a total labyrinth. You know those games, those point-and-click games where you spend ages just going between three rooms and you're like, you look up magazines to find out where you're supposed to go next, and then suddenly you just realise you didn't see a corridor and then it opens up a whole new bit of it? That's exactly what happened here.
Actually, another interesting aspect of the palace is that it had a plumbing system with clay pipes, and it wasn't alone. Even fairly humble houses in the Minoan civilization had clay gutters.
Yeah, well, that all sounds very pretty advanced. Until you get your trains blocked by clay, then you're going to need more than a plunger, pal.
Pipes blocked up with the same thing they're made of, Gav. Cool, that's going to cost you, mate.
The average Minoan family had four or five large storage jars, pithoi, which were filled with food for the year. Interestingly, houses that don't have these jars have much more pottery, textiles, and bronze implements. The suggestion here is that these were industrial workshops that would trade their wares for food without the need to store anything themselves. One site had all kinds of plates and cups and bowls and little bowls that fitted inside big bowls. All kinds of stuff for your home.
I bet they did really good meatballs.
Yes, and then there was a whole layer of discarded Allen keys.
And you can never find your way around. Well, and actually, that's big. True. Yeah.
Why did these Minoans collapse?
Well, I don't know, but I've got a good IKEA. Sorry. Among the suspected culprits included a huge volcanic explosion followed by tidal waves. Both of those things happened, but they weren't enough to end the Minoans. Ed, past Ed, what do you reckon?
It's really hard to know why the Minoans were destroyed and the Palace of Knossos abandoned. But if I had to guess, I wouldn't say it was a volcanic eruption. I wouldn't say it was the Mycenaean invasion. I'd probably say it's the noise of these crickets. It's just deafening. You just wouldn't be able to sleep. You'd just move out.
Thanks, Past Ed. Over to you, Present Phil.
Ed.
Phil.
Past Ed.
Phil.
Ed.
Past Ed. Present Phil.
Both Eds.
Back to you, Phil. Present Phil.
Ed.
Phil.
Ed. It was not only in their myths that the ancient Greeks spoke of Crete. In the Odyssey, which is thought to reflect the events of the late Bronze Age, Homer described Crete as
a lovely land washed by waves on every side, densely populated and boasting 90 cities. Among their cities is the great city of Knossos, where Minos reigned.
The Greek poet Hesiod told of
Cretans from Knossos, the city of Minos, who sailed their black ship to sandy Pylos.
The Greek mainland. So the general consensus of the ancient Greeks was that Crete had once been a really big deal.
What is the legacy of the Minoans?
Now, this is an interesting question. When we talked about the ancient Greeks, we talked about a continuous line of legacy from briefly democratic Athens to the US government. But the legacy of the Minoans is now only based on their archaeological rediscovery. And since we don't know a huge amount about them, it means that their legacy has been open to, let's say, interpretation. Say what you want about Arthur Evans, and we have, but he helped to make the Minoans fashionable. What was called Cretomania.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Creto!
Unlike us, the Minoans even had merch. Famous Spanish Venetian artist Mariano Fortuny produced dresses and scarves inspired by the Minoan motifs and patterns. Minoan sets started to be seen in plays and ballets during the late Belle Epoque.
Huh?
Period before World War I.
Yeah.
Creta mania became so big that even ancient Cretan graves were being dug up and robbed to provide something fashionable to put up on a fireplace.
Darling, I love the new vase, Minoan.
Yes, I had a burial site desecrated and destroyed just to get my hands on it.
Fabulous! You must introduce me to your grave robber.
I'd be delighted.
Ballerina Isadora Duncan visited Knossos and gave an impromptu dance that made many of the British archaeologists spit out their tea in scandal. Sadly, she was later killed in 1929 when her scarf got accidentally wrapped up in the wheels of a car.
Could it have been one of Fortuny's Minoan scarves? Perhaps she danced on the wrong grave. This sounds like a job for Hercule Poirot.
So you see, Mr. Frotney, it was you who killed Madame Duncan in a manner most foul. What is another name for a scarf? A snood. And so I submitted to you that it was you that snood all along.
Wait, is that your evidence?
Poirot, there's actually some very clear fingerprints on the car.
Not now, Inspector. With my flimsy evidence in hand, is about to confess.
No, I'm not.
Scarf also rhymes with giraffe. And do you have not a long neck like a giraffe?
All right, damn it. I admit I killed her with the Minoan scarf.
You've done it again, Poirot.
Oh, have I? Thank you very much.
I won't go easily, you know.
Just one more thing.
I'm Columbo's wife. I don't have an evening class. He's been cheating on me.
For Aryans and Nazis of the 1920s and 30s, and probably for the Jordan Petersons of this world more latterly, the Minoans represented a feminine culture. Oh no.
A decadent, pacifist, tyrannical neo-Marxist matriarchy, which was rightly conquered by the masculine Mycenaeans. So, good luck with that!
Snake goddesses aside, the lack of weaponry was seen as a flag that Crete was at peace for a long time. However, beacons on Crete suggest that there was some kind of defence network, and weapons have been found since.
Right, so that's that misogynistic misreading of history buggered then?
Sigmund Freud, a bit of an archaeology fan, decided that ancient civilizations left a scar on the psyche, and he linked that to the idea during the rounds that civilization evolved from a matriarchy to a patriarchy. So he made the Minoan diagnosis for a bisexual patient, saying she'd regressed and was hysterical, and that's why she fancied girls.
Almost makes Scientology sound sane, really.
For the suffragettes, the flower power generation, and second wave feminists, the Minoans were to be conversely celebrated. But there's no compelling evidence for any of these perceptions of the Minoans. But when your civilization has effectively been dead for thousands of years, it really gives people license to see just what they want to see and to project their own prejudices onto you. Earth, 2220.
Commander Clark, I found yet another metal sculpture just like the rest. One long, thin metal rod topped by three slender prongs. Proof that these creatures also worshipped our three-headed snake god!
Hey, Phil.
Yeah.
The punchline was, he found a fork.
Fork's got four prongs.
Heretic!
How did the Minoans end?
So while it's hard to point to one thing, there's a few apocalyptic things we can point to. Natural disasters definitely seem to have played a part. One major incident was the eruption of the Thera volcano, which is now Santorini, in 1600 BC. A combination of tsunamis and earthquakes seems to have caused coastal destruction, with ash and gases released into the atmosphere, likely having a large impact on agricultural production. That said, Minoan civilization seemed to have continued. In fact, the Palace of Knossos seemed to have remained largely intact. What we do know is that Minoans were invaded by the Mycenaeans.
Who were the Mycenaeans?
The Mycenaeans came from mainland Greece and developed a city-state culture surrounded by massive walls. They developed a written language called Linear B that we can find on Crete itself. Although they didn't call it Linear B, as well as evidence of their settlement, including burial customs and weapons. They seem to have appeared on Crete from 1450 BC as the Minoans are going into decline. Some people have theorized that the Mycenaeans may have been a subject people of the Minoans, but took their opportunity to extend their power to the Minoans' Cretan heartland. And while we can't say for sure that this was the case, and, you know, what can we say for sure, how often does one power supplant another in its own homeland without some level of violence? In fact, there seems to be evidence of deliberate damage done to the Minoan shrines, including the smashing of a bull's head. And that leads us back to the story of Theseus and the Minotaur. Rewind your brains back to about 20 minutes ago or so, and you might remember that Theseus, son of an Athenian king, came from the mainland to kill the Minotaur and end the tyrannical tradition of King Minos taking Athenian children and feeding them to the Minotaur. Well, there are some weird coincidences in this story, as pointed out by one-time CTDEA guest Sebastian Major in his show Our Fake History. And you can catch his appearance on our show at the end of Season 2 about Sparta. The Minoans had a religious bull obsession and used images of bulls in their art. It's almost as if a monstrous bull, or a minotaur, you see where we're going, would be associated with the Minoans, especially if you were a people under their domination. Remember the bull leaping? In one account of the myth, Theseus flips over the minotaur whenever it charges. The Palace of Knossos itself is a labyrinthine maze of rooms and passages.
Which I found when I went there. Couldn't find the toilet either.
Then there's the axe that accompanied the symbol of the bull, which was known as a labyris. Labyris? Labyrinth? Coincidence? Wait a minute, Ed. Who called it a labyris, and in what language?
Generally speaking, I do thorough research and double-check everything.
Yeah.
But this fact, I just uncritically swiped from Our Fake History.
Right.
It's basically, what I'm saying is their fault. It's Sebastian Major's fault.
Hey, if we can trust Wikipedia, we can trust Sebastian. So anyway, the story of the Minotaur is Athenian youths being sacrificed to a bull-headed monster. Getting it now? And whether it's literal sacrifices or just large amounts of tribute that states usually have to pay to the larger power, a son of Athens goes to end this tyranny. It's easy to see how the Mycenaean conquering of the Minoans lined up with this myth, and why it's often said that stories and myths like this often contain a grain of truth, even if the details are nicely spiced up and totally transformed in the retelling.
And if you think that sounds far-fetched, just wait until we do our next episode called Was Minoan Crete the Real Atlantis?
It'd be really great to end this Series 5 on a low.
Turning history into a manufactured mess of myth. Don't blame me. Arthur Evans started it.
He ought to know.
You went digging at sites in central Crete. Thought you'd found the lot of Mycenaeans.
I know the city was there, the palace of Knossos with stairs. You said you thought you found a theater. The press excitedly covered your discoveries. They were sure you'd seen the Minotaur's lair.
So you moved all the rooms in the tomb around, and if any uses for all you found to fabricate. You said there was a place where they played board games. You made a play out, what's so lame?
What's so lame? Now we start again. And I'm here to remind you of the mess you left when you excavated from Minotaurs. Heap of bullshit. Now we left to try and extricate the Minoans.
Ah yes, Existers, thank you so much for listening to this series. Next time we'll be finishing it off by giving you what you've wanted all along, plumbing the depths of historical integrity as we ask. Was Minoan Crete the lost city of Atlantis? Or could it have been the cradle of a civilization of a more extraterrestrial origin? Find out next time on...
Countries that never existed at all, they never existed still, not anymore. If you're unclear what this podcast is for, it's for countries that never existed at all.
Aliens.